Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hemlane Hustle. I am so excited to share our guest today, who is Adam Kinte. And one of the things that I admire most about Adam is his passion and subject matter expertise in helping real estate investors set up the right entity structure to reduce risk and grow their portfolio. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. And to give you guys some background, first, how I met Adam was back when I was looking to set up an LLC structure. Went to him. I've actually gone through quite a few different providers just to ask them, how would you set up an a structure? How do you think of series LLC versus setting up like real estate privacy trusts? And Adam was hands down the most knowledgeable person. So I invited him to the show today to talk to all of you about what to think about when you are when you own your rental properties, and most importantly, at what point you should set up an LLC. So with that, Adam, I want to jump right into it and ask the questions that most of our listeners and audience want to hear about. So there's a lot of investors out there like me who say, I have insurance and I have an umbrella policy. And so with that, I don't think that I need to set up an LLC. I am well protected. And the first thing you said was, no, you aren't. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more about what that doesn't cover. Like, what is my insurance company not telling me? What are those examples? And why should any real estate investor start thinking today about setting up an LLC or some sort of entity structure to protect themselves?
Yeah, so super good question and a common myth. So I was a licensed insurance agent. I was licensed in 43 states, and it's a dirty business. I tell everybody, keep a good insurance policy. But remember, there are so many things that can happen that the insurance won't pay or won't pay enough. This is why people use LLCs. And the example I love to give, imagine a guy is driving down the road, runs through a stop sign, T-bones a car. The guy he hits ends up in the hospital with some broken bones. First thing he does is call the accident injury attorney. In a wreck, need a check? If we don't win, you don't pay. And remember, the poorest people in this country can hire the best attorneys. It does not cost them a dime. But before the attorney takes the case, he is going to do an asset search. And let's figure out, what does this person have that we can go after? And it used to be, to do an asset search, it took a lot of time and a lot of money. We'd have to hire private investigators to go dig through county records and try and figure out what you own. Well, now we have Google. If I have your name and social security number, within 3 to 5 days' time, I will know everything about you. And if I don't have your social, for an extra $50, they'll get it for me. So this guy that ran the stop sign, the attorney does a search and realizes that he has nothing. Does the attorney stop there? No, he says, now hang on a second. The guy that ran that stop sign, was he by chance working for a company when this accident took place? If so, I could sue the company that he works for. Did he have any alcohol in his system? If so, I could sue the bar or restaurant that served him. Did he have any prescription medication in his blood? If so, I could sue the doctor that prescribed it, pharmacist that handed it to him, or the drug manufacturer. And that stop sign he ran, was it free of obstruction, or was there something blocking the view of that stop sign? If so, I could sue the homeowner where that stop sign sits. And come to think of it, how many accidents has there been at this intersection? We might be able to sue the city or the county for not having a stop light instead of a stop sign. So it is unfortunate, but we live in a world that it has gotten so far away from suing someone that's done something wrong to just trying to tie in the deep pockets. And with over 1.3 million attorneys in the US, there's just not enough good cases to go around. These poor guys get stuck taking bad cases with bad facts, just trying to make a living. And in our court system, it's not about who's right or who's wrong, who's got the deep pockets, who's got the money. And you want to make sure that you are not the deep pockets. Even if you have one rental property, I hear all the time people say, oh, just get an umbrella policy. And we think that an umbrella policy covers everything. Insurance companies are genius in their marketing. But the newsflash, you get a $1 million umbrella for about 200 bucks a year, which begs the question, if that $1 million umbrella for 200 bucks a year covers everything, why would I need anything else? And the newsflash is the umbrella is cheap because it only kicks in if the underlying policy exhausts its policy limits. And the fact is that insurance companies have adjusters and attorneys whose job it is to pay out as little as possible on claims. This is why LLCs are so important. Getting it set up right and setting up in the right state gives you that added protection, which is absolute, versus the insurance hoping that they cover it.
Adam, what are some examples of that? You gave the example of the red light and the stop sign and the homeowner potentially getting sued. I would hope that there the homeowner could justify they didn't put in the stop light, but I get your point. Everyone gets roped into these lawsuits and get these nuisance claims against them. What are some of the largest things that you have seen? And this is a broad, more general across the nation. Broad cases that you have seen insurance does not cover that having an LLC would protect you.
Well, the obvious one is the slip and falls. And I went through this myself when, I have six boys, and we were at a birthday party when one of my children were really young. Went to a friend's house and did a little birthday party for his 4-year-old daughter. And when we were leaving this party, we were leaving, and my son, he somehow slammed his finger in the screen door of their house, and it almost cut off the end of his thumb. We took him right to the hospital. They sewed it back on. Everything was fine. Well, a few months later, we my going to work, and my friend Robert says, Adam, what are you doing suing me? I said, Robert, what are you talking about? He said, yeah, I just had a process server show up this morning on my way to work, and he served me a notice that you're suing me. I said, Robert, I'm not suing you at all. What are you talking about? Well, apparently, go to the hospital and they ask what happened, where did it happen, et cetera. Well, guess why they asked that information? My health insurance covered it, and then my insurance company sued the homeowner where the incident took place. $25,000 lawsuit that I had nothing to do with, where they were coming after him as the homeowner. So, as innocent as you may be, if you own that house, you're responsible. A really big one is mold claims. Mold is an environmental exclusion. You got mold in the house, you got dirty tenants that don't even clean the place and they develop mold. Wouldn't you think that logically, well, because you didn't clean the place? Well, guess what? You own the house. And mold claims are an environmental exclusion that the insurance company will not cover. And you start going across, contract litigation is huge. When there are repairs and maintenance and things that need to be done, you have to hire contractors or a handyman or somebody to do these repairs. An injury happens, whoever owns that house, that's the guy who's going to get sued. So just the fact that you own the property, that is enough that they can come after it. Most attorneys, if they can find $30,000 of equity somewhere, they'll take the case for free. So I have seen it all. If you're a business owner, I had a client that had a contract where he was importing all of this electronics material. So he would import it, had a big warehouse, and then he would ship that material out to the different store locations. So he's kind of a middleman, wholesale type business. So anticipating a big boom in electronic sales, he went and leased out additional space because he was anticipating more sales and more product. Well, as soon as that happened, of course, a downturn in the economy, the electronics company said, no, we're not going to need that extra space. Yet he had already signed the lease with the tenant or of the storage facility, and he had to back out. The storage facility came back and sued him. And of course, because all of the everything was in his name. His corporation wasn't set up properly. And he got sued personally, was forced to file bankruptcy on a simple miscalculation in the business. My favorite one, I was teaching a class in Newark, New Jersey. Guy had 21 rental properties, all free and clear. They're all about 350, 400,000. He had a vacancy come up, and there was a squatter that moved in. The squatter was drunk and high. Slipped and fell and broke her leg and sued him as the owner of the property, a squatter. And now he gets, they sued the LLC that owned the property, and they sued him personally, gets brought into a deposition. He had to disclose 20 other LLCs that he owned. He was, when I talked to him, he was 2 years into litigation, and it cost him thousands of dollars, and he had no idea that this was about to happen. So this is why we want to be prepared. And I don't say this to scare people, but this is the world we live in. The greatest victory is the battle never fought. So if you can get these things set up, get these properties into trust or LLCs, the chances of this happening to you are much, much less. You can still have somebody sue you, but if you do it right, they're not getting a dime.
Yeah. And I know you don't want to scare people, but I almost think that, you know, at least from my perspective and seen through over 26,000 rental properties, I have also noticed that this stuff comes up. There's these nuisance lawsuits, frivolous lawsuits, and you do really need to protect yourself. I really resonate with the mold one. You know, it's organic, organic growth until it gets tested. But you're right. It's interesting because as the owner of the property, you yourself, you know, a lot of times that organic growth or mold comes from essentially to the place being too cluttered, you know, boxes stacked in a closet and mold is growing behind them. And so I couldn't agree more that setting yourself up and mitigating that risk is important. Everything from making sure you're doing annual inspections or semi-annual inspections to getting the right structure in place. So let's talk about that structure. Because one of my first questions for you was, I live in California. I know a lot of listeners live in California. So even if I incorporate in Wyoming, which I know you recommend, even if I incorporate there, I still have a minimum tax of $800 per year for my LLC just because I live in California. So tell me about how I should think about that.
It is the cost of doing business. If you live in California, I don't care where the property is. I don't care where the LLC is. The California Franchise Tax Board is $61 billion deficit. They want their 800 bucks. So if you want to be cheap about things and not pay the $800, and you might get away with it. But my advice to everybody, if you live in California, if you have a corporation or LLC, regardless of where the property is, regardless of where the LLC is, pay California their 800 bucks. They are so aggressive. There is one solution, and it involves a U-Haul, because you would have to move out of California, Dana, if you don't want to pay that 800 bucks. Now, this is the other reason why the structuring is so important, because you hear a lot of attorneys tell you that every property needs to have its own LLC. So if there's a problem with one property, it will not affect the others. It sure sounds nice, but it turns into a nightmare to manage. And at $800 per LLC, super expensive. So the structure we like to use, one LLC. Under that LLC, we put each property into a land trust that will separate the liability of each property without having to have all these LLCs. And you're only paying $800 one time instead of for every property that you own. So it's manageable, scalable, and financially efficient.
So Adam, I think what I'm hearing is don't have just one rental property. You should grow your portfolio, strategically set those goals. And then the $800, if you live in California or you live in another state where you do have to pay for foreign qualification taxes on an LLC, the $800 is spread because of these land trusts. Now, I've heard of something called a series LLC, which also I think avoids having to pay the $800 times the number of LLCs. I've also heard about land trusts. Tell me the pros and cons. What's the difference between the two?
Yeah, so a series LLC is that you have this parent company LLC, and then below that, you have these cells within the series that are there to, quote unquote, separate the liability of various investments. Well, series LLCs were developed by hedge funds. These big, huge billion-dollar companies with teams of attorneys. It was a way for them to separate the liability of various investment opportunities without having to refile. It's very expensive to set up these funds and such. So the Series LLC was born. And there is little or no precedence on a series LLC. So number one, when you set up a series LLC, they're so new that we have no idea how the courts are going to treat the cells within the within a series. And theoretically, if this cell was to remain its own entity, it has to have its own bank account, its own records, its own everything. And I learned just a couple years ago, we have a CPA firm in a house, and I had one of my CPAs says, yeah, we never do series LLCs because if one of the cells gets audited, it is all getting audited. So we are not a fan of series LLCs. Will it work? Maybe, but I would rather go with something that is tried and true, which is using the LLC with land trust. Not to mention, most people, when you're buying rental properties, you get the mortgage using your name and your credit. You get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, and now the property's in your name, and you could just quit claim it to the LLC, and now you're protected. Well, the problem, you just violated the mortgage agreement. As soon as the bank sells the mortgage or does an internal audit and sees that your name is not on record, they could always invoke the due on sale clause. Put the property into a land trust. By law, the bank can't do a darn thing. It's a federal law called the Garn-St. Germain Act of 1982. When you put property into a trust, the bank cannot invoke the due on sale clause. So it's a clean and easy way to do it. Take that stress off your back. You hear people say, well, the bank really doesn't invoke the due on sale clauses if you're paying your mortgages. Well, the news flash, in uncertain times like this, when you're seeing all these bank failures and such, plan on the fact that banks do a lot more auditing. And when things are not in your name, they call the notes due and they want their money. So this is a clean, easy way around it without creating all these problems for you and your mortgages.
Yeah, great. So if I have each property in a land trust, they all report up to an LLC. Who signs the documents? Talk about who signs the lease. Is it me as a managing member of the LLC? Is it me with every single land trust having a different name? Walk me through that.
Yeah, super good question. So the land trust are just named a street address of the property, the 123 Main Street Trust, the 707 Oak Street Trust. The LLC is the beneficiary, the lifetime beneficiary of these land trusts. So the LLC is the one with the bank account. And when I'm forming an LLC, there's three ways we could do it. I could list your name on record as manager, member, or managing member. Well, the word member means owner. There is no reason for us to ever put on public record. So anytime I'm forming an LLC, I would just list you or you and your spouse or you and your partner as managers. So when you're entering into contracts and agreements, you got this rental property and you're hiring a property manager. You are not hiring the property manager. The LLC is hiring the property manager. So anytime a contract or agreement asks for initials, you just initial with your initials. Anytime a contract or agreement asks for a signature, you must always sign your name, comma, manager, or your name as manager of ABC Property Group, LLC. So very important. As long as you do that, that's one of the, again, unique benefit of doing a Wyoming entity. The law states you shall be indemnified. Acting as manager, member, managing member, agent, or employee of the LLC, you shall be indemnified and cannot be held personally liable unless you're committing fraud. And I agree 100%. If you're a crook or a thief, there should be no law protecting you. And that's the case with these LLCs as well. But assuming you're not committing fraud, sign contracts and agreements as manager, and you're protected.
I love that. So I hope all you listeners heard not managing member. I've seen that in some contracts. It is member or manager of that LLC. And you know what's great about that is with Hemlane, most of our users are self-managing their rental properties. And so for them, it is really important to have that distinction of I am the manager of the property. And not the owner, but the manager, and making sure that that is brought through in all of their communications that they have. Okay, I want to jump into here, revocable living trusts. So you have your land trusts that roll up to your LLC. Walk me through a revocable living trust and how all of that works.
Yeah, let me share my screen with you because I have a flow chart that I think would be really helpful for everyone to see. Yeah, so this is kind of our investor structure, and it looks more complicated than it is. At the very bottom, we have the revocable living trust, your estate plan. Everybody needs to have a revocable living trust. If God forbid something were to happen and you have nothing in place, or if you only have a will, everything you own will go through probate. I'm dealing with this right now. One of my best friends died a couple weeks ago of cancer, and he had his trust, but he didn't do it. He didn't put his stuff in there properly. His poor wife has bills coming due on April 1st, and she can't pay the bills because she got locked out of the bank account. He had a checklist and said, "When I die, do this, 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 this." He had cancer, so we knew it was coming. Third on the checklist, call Social Security. She calls Social Security, lets them know that he passed. Immediately, they notify the banks, and the banks froze all of his accounts. He's got this account that he pays bills out of that is now frozen, that he did not have in the name of the trust. His poor wife now has all these bills and cannot pay them. So make sure that when you're doing this, that it's done right. Everybody needs to have this will, last will, and testament that covers morbid things like if I die, I don't want to be cremated, medical directives, financial directives, medical power of attorney, financial power of attorney, child care directives. If God forbid something happens on date night, who do you want to have guardianship of the kids? Especially living in California, if you don't have this in place, your kids get shipped off to the state and they become a ward of the state until the courts finally get through to appoint guardianship for your kids. So we include that. The trust would only hold title to your primary residence and any of the LLCs, the membership of your LLCs. And then we also double check your estate plan and make sure you have the pour over will. Just like pouring a glass of water, anything you forgot to put in the trust or chose not to put in the trust will automatically go in the trust when you die. So that I have at the bottom because that's our foundation. Now to the top right, you see this blue LLC that is disregarded. If you own rental properties, it is passive income. Passive income automatically gets offset by passive losses. So I don't need to file my taxes any differently. It's just disregarded for tax purpose, meaning all the profits and losses will report on your personal return, 1040, Schedule E, just like it always has. Properties themselves, you'll notice right under that triangle, we've got those little REPT. It stands for Real Estate Privacy Trust, also known as a land trust, that will separate the liability of each property without having to have all these different LLCs. So the land trust are owned by the LLC. The LLC is owned by your revocable living trust. It gives you the very best legal protection without causing you a bunch of problems and stresses and headaches. That one LLC has a checkbook. It collects the rent. It pays the expenses. Whatever's left over, write yourself a check. In the memo, you put distribution. And when tax time rolls around, you file your taxes, 1040 Schedule E. Exactly the same as you always have, exactly the same as if you didn't have the LLC. So it makes it easy. Now you'll notice on the left side, if you have a business, if you are flipping houses or you're a real estate agent or you have independent contractor income, then I would do an LLC taxed as an S corporation that gives you the best tax advantages. So that's why this flow chart looks a little more complicated. And what I like to do is we can build credit on that company that's taxed as an S corp, where you're not having to use your personal credit for everything for the business. So there's a lot of unique advantages that we get in structuring these things properly. So hopefully that answered your question. I guess more than answered your question
That
of how we structure it.
is awesome. I know it's a super dense topic, but probably one of the most important ones for listeners out there. And if you get this right, you're going to sleep at night, and you're also going to make sure that you're making more money than anyone else because you are well protected and you don't have that additional risk. And of course, here at Hemlane, we always want to mitigate the risk. One other thing that's here that I really want to point out is the 401k plan, because a lot of W-2 employees do not understand that when they have their IRA and then moves over to a 401k, they just kind of sits there. Like there's money that I have just sitting in this account. I have no idea if it's just an allocation of, you know, what it's invested in. And on top of that, I don't have any control over it. I'm not the CEO of those companies. So I have no idea how that company is performing. And my retirement and the legacy that I leave for my kids, what I pass down to my kids, is obviously completely dependent on something that's outside my control. So I think a lot of folks don't understand self-directed. And this is fascinating because you guys actually set this up where I could just go ahead and double my portfolio count because I can take everything from my 401k. I can self-direct it and say, I'm not going to invest it in the market. I'm going to go ahead and invest it in real estate. And now suddenly I can buy a ton more properties off that money. Walk us through that solo 401k LLC disregarded that you have there and how that works.
Yeah, so I love this topic. So right now, most people, if you have any IRAs, any previous accounts, 401k, 403b, TSP, TIA, CREP, any of these old retirement accounts you have, they're sitting there in the stock market and you're so nervous because if you've been around for a while, you've seen what happens when the stock market takes a tank. You lose half the value of your account and it takes years to come back. So you can roll those accounts over, no taxes, no penalties. We're rolling it from one account to another. And the option is I could do a self-directed IRA or I could do a self-directed solo K. Now, not everybody qualifies for the solo K, but if you do, this is the perfect vehicle. So say you had $100,000 in an old retirement account. We roll it over. You can then leverage those funds. So the rule is you cannot personally guarantee a loan when you're using retirement funds. The IRS does not allow it. It must be a non-recourse loan, meaning if you don't make the payment, they cannot come after you. They just get the house back. So because it's riskier for the bank, they make you put 50% down. But using $100,000, I can go buy a $200,000 rental with that mortgage. As the rent come in, I take all of my positive cash and just pay off the mortgage. Assuming that you're not buying rental properties in California where the cash flow is poor, for example, I have a lot of clients that buy properties in the Midwest, Florida, Alabama, Indiana, Missouri, states that we get better cash on cash returns. Then you take all your positive cash and just pay off the mortgage. The goal being when you retire, if you had the money in a 401k and say you start drawing out $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month, it is only a matter of time before you slowly go broke. And now what? Well, now you're 75, 80 years old, and you're praying to God that Social Security stays around. So owning property puts you in a position you will always have rent coming in. And over time, through inflation, those rents that you're collecting will continue to go up. So now at some point, you're 75, 80 years old, you've got these rental properties producing cash flow for the rest of your life. And when you eventually die, you're able to pass these on to your children, which is a game changer. It really changes the family tree when you're able to pass things on to your family. So again, the option we'd have is an IRA or a solo K. In both cases, the way I do it is I set up a special purpose LLC that is owned by your 401k or owned by your IRA, managed by you. You now have checkbook control over those retirement funds. Now, you're not limited to buying rental properties. You could, if you want, you could invest in commercial syndications, or you can be a private lender. You could buy tax liens and tax deeds. Or if you want, we certainly could buy some Tesla stock. You still can do stocks, but you're not limited to those stocks. And I think that's a big problem that most people have when the money is sitting there in these old accounts. Those investment firms are charging between 1% and 4% of the value of your account, which is decimating your retirement account. You think, well, it's only 1% or 2%. How bad can that be? Well, the fact is there was a video that I watched. It was Jack Bogle. He was the founder of Vanguard. And they had a 60 minutes interview. And he said, these 401k plans are the biggest racket ever. You put in all of the money, you bear all of the risk. And over a 50-year period with their modest 2% fees, they end up with 70% of your retirement account. Most people, our brains aren't that big. We can't wrap our minds around how can that little 2% fee equal 70%. That is the power and magic of compound fees over time. So these are some great options of things you can do with those old retirement accounts, or if you're stuck in the stock market, these are options that we have. And I'm not an investment advisor. I don't tell you what to buy, when to buy, or where to buy. I am an expert in prohibited transactions and what you cannot do. And there's some very basic rules that I always work with my clients. If you're doing something you're not sure if you could or should do, I always say, call me, measure twice, cut once. The penalties are severe. So we just make sure we're doing things right. And that's what I help with.
Adam, I love it. And I think from that perspective, like my two key takeaways here is this is pre-tax dollars, right? So it goes a lot farther if you could max out that 401k and put as much in. So pre-taxes, then you get this just dividend almost every single month going into there that you can use in the future, pass down to your children. And the management fees is such an interesting one because, you know, my 401k that I have right now definitely does not send me an email reminding me how much they're charging in fees. And that is all very much, you know, hidden from me so that I'm not reminded on that. And so, you know, from that perspective, thank you for that. With that, anything else that you think that our audience should know about? And if they have any additional questions, how can they reach out to you?
Yeah, so well, I wanted to point out to everybody, the best thing for you to do in terms of owning real estate, it is one of the best ways to build wealth. And make sure that as you're doing this, just take those steps to protect yourself. I can't do something after the fact. If you get a notice that you're being sued, I can't do anything for you. That guy that I told you about with the 21 rental properties, I showed him this structure and he said, I got to do it right away. And I said, uh-oh. What's going on? And then he tells me about the lawsuit. I said, well, I'm so sorry, but I can do nothing for you because you're in the middle of a lawsuit. If I do anything, it's fraudulent conveyance or fraudulent transfer. So wise, structure these things ahead of time. While the skies are blue, put these things in place. If you think setting up an entity is expensive, wait until you get notification that your insurance company doesn't cover it and see how much it's going to cost you just to hire an attorney to respond. Be wise and set these things up ahead of time. So, yeah, anybody that needs help, feel free to email me, adam@nchinc.com. Just Adam at N for Nevada, C for corporate, H for headquarters, Inc. for incorporated. So, adam@nchinc.com. And shoot me an email. Let me know that you heard about us on the podcast, and I will be happy to go through what you have, how you're doing it. My time is free. I'm generous with my time, and I'm happy to help you with whatever you need.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Adam, for joining the Hemlane Hustle today. For those of you who like this show, please make sure to review us, and we look forward to seeing you on the next one. Thanks so much.